How's it going, everybody? Welcome to Rolling Lines and Apples and Genos production. My name is Josh Hutchinson, and I'll be your host. I've got a couple of special guests tonight, and we're going to be doing something a little bit different. We're going to be looking at the biggest disappointments and biggest surprises of the first half of the fantasy hockey season, and whether these performances are sustainable or not. Let's go. All right. Now, if you're wondering who the hell are these fine looking gentlemen beside me on the screen, these are my boys, Zach and Adrian. They're a couple of smelly Habs fans, but I allowed them on the show anyways. So the reason why we're doing the format slightly different today is because, well, first of all, it's the All-Star break. There's like barely any games being played right now. There's, I think, a couple being played tonight. But
yeah, Ottawa and Detroit.
Not a lot has happened. And it's not incredibly exciting. So I didn't think it really made sense to be giving tips on streaming and stuff like that, because really there's not a lot happening. So we're going to take a look at the first half. We're going to get kind of an eye test versus analytics perspective on things. Zach and Adrian are both seasoned fantasy hockey players. They've played for a long time. We've been in leagues together numerous times. Zach is actually in the Apples and Genos listener dynasty league. So if any of you are in that, you'll recognize Mr. Zach Attack. And actually, I do want to address something, because I don't know if you knew this, Zach, but there was a trade that you made recently that was under a lot of scrutiny. People were very upset about it. And they thought, so you traded Artemi Panarin.
Sure did.
To one of the top contenders. And everyone was very upset because they did not think you got enough return for that. So they were calling bullshit. They were calling collusion.
And you should have put Dylan Cousins on this disappointment list, because what the hell happened to him this year?
Yeah, fair enough. Was he part of that trade?
He was.
Okay. As a Dylan Cousins fantasy holder, I can agree with that. He has been.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, it's been tough. Buffalo's been really tough in general. I don't think there's a lot of guys there that are, you're probably getting a good return on your draft capital this year. So
I don't think so.
We will dive into one Buffalo Sabre on this list, but tell me a little bit before we jump in. I'll hit Adrian first. What is your history with fantasy hockey? What leagues are you in this year? What are the formats of those leagues? Are they points? Are they categories? What are we talking about here, Adrian?
So this year, just in the one fantasy hockey league, I was in three last year and the year before. And I just cut it down because one of the leagues I was in was just the way that it was set up was just so frustrating. So like they too many goalie appearances needed, too many counting stats that were just ridiculous. So I left that one. I couldn't handle it anymore.
Fair enough. Yeah. Yeah. I can get behind trying to minimize the impact of goalies.
I figured you would like that. So you would appreciate my frustration with that one. So
yeah. Yeah, exactly. All right. And Zach, how about you, man?
Yeah, I'm just in two this year. I've done more in the past. I will be getting rid of one of my leagues next year. I'm in a cast league this year, and whoever's running it, I don't really know. And it's set up super weird. They've got goals and assists at the same value. It's like goals and assists plus minus hits and blocks. That's it. So like, the best player on my team is Erik Gustafsson, or like the most surprising person on my team is Erik Gustafsson, because he was playing PP1 for the Rangers and was racking up assists, and it was giving me the same amount of points as Connor McDavid would if he scored three goals. So I was it just changes the way you look at the league, and I don't like it. So
yeah, fair enough. Okay. That's interesting. yeah, no, I don't think I would like that either. I'm in a points league this year. That is run by the SDPN community. Mm-hmm. The point system in it is fucking whack. It's insane. It's like face-off wins are worth like a crazy amount. Like, you don't even need to really score. You need a bunch of centers or like dual eligible players that have center eligibility that just win a bunch of face-offs, or defensemen that hit and block a ton. That's all you need. So like, and honestly, there were about two or three of us that were privy to the fact that this was a fucking whack system, so we drafted accordingly. So I think I took like Radko Gudas in the second or third round or something like that. Yeah. And it's crazy. I am winning the league because a bunch of the guys just were like drafting the way they would draft in a normal points league. But
yeah, I picked up Erik Gustafsson off of waivers when one of my defensemen got hurt. And I was like, wait a second, this calculates differently than other leagues.
Yeah, fair enough.
And Gustafsson probably shouldn't be like one of your better players in a fantasy hockey
league. No, he really shouldn't. No.
Definitely not, especially not now. Like, he had that stretch where Adam Fox was hurt and he was killing it, but yeah, definitely not at this point. All right, let's jump into I've listed a few players that are disappointments based on their average draft position, they're not performing up to their average draft position so far this year, and then a few guys that are incredibly outperforming that. So we have some skaters, we have some goalies. We're gonna jump in, look at sustainability. I do have a few comments here. Let's jump on this. Oh yes, this is a good point. So Aman says, thoughts on the big trade. I did want to touch on this before we got going. So Adrian and I were talking off mic about this, but Elias Lindholm to the Vancouver Canucks for Andre Kuzmenko. I didn't see the entire details of the trade.
I've got it up here actually.
Okay,
so it's Kuzmenko, a 2024 first rounder, conditional 2024 fourth rounder, Yanni Yermo, and Hunter Bruce. I have no idea how to pronounce his last name.
Bruce DeWitch. Yeah,
that's it. And the Canucks just get Elias Lindholm.
Okay, fair enough.
As a Habs fan, I like that Lindholm's now off the board.
That's what I was saying to Josh. So I was like, oh, that's perfect for us. But
perfect.
Yeah.
Come on in, whoever wants Sean Monahan.
Yeah, there you go. So that increases the value of Sean Monahan at this point. You wonder if maybe there's like a trade. This creates a domino effect of trades. Mm-hmm. Now that the top guy, essentially the top guy that was super available is off the board. So super interesting, especially, if you're a Habs fan, definitely. Well,
Patrick Alvin getting his new contract signed, announced today, and making this big trade. He's a busy boy.
And they're really going for it now, just despite what any analytics say. I mean, they're having, like, you can't argue with the season they're having either, though. So,
yeah, I mean, if you're on an analytics bender and you're a team like that, that's an absolute cap hell. And I don't know, going into the season, we didn't know what the hell this team was.
I don't think they knew what the hell they were.
Yeah. Well, but now they're creating, I think they're leaning into the fact that they're top heavy. They have like a decent defensive system, sort of. I think it's more about Thatcher Demko than it is about their defense. But now you've got just like an absolutely stacked power play with Elias Lindholm there. It looks pretty nice. So Amon also asks, is Kuzmenko a must add? Now, my opinion would be not yet. I need to see where he slots into the Calgary lineup. I think if he's getting top power play minutes, if he's getting more minutes than he did in Vancouver, then I think he's probably still a streamer level player. I need to see who he's playing with and how much ice time they're giving him, because I'm still not super stoked about it.
It's Calgary. Like, really? what's he really going to do there?
Yeah. Is he really going to move the needle?
Who's the center going to be, right? Like, he's going to be what? Does Backlund get moved up to second line center and maybe he plays with Backlund? Like, that's not going to really help his really fantasy juice, like, hockey.
It doesn't boost the point totals.
Value.
Yeah. All right. So Dan also says, did my Suter pick for next week go down the drain? I think it did. That was literally my first thought, because I picked up Suter in one of my leagues because they had four games next week. And yeah, I think he's safely probably off the top power play. I mean, stranger things have happened, but I'd say that they're probably going to want to get Lindholm on that PP1 for sure. And then here we go. A question about Alex DeBrincat from Antonio. DeBrincat has been disappointing lately. He was getting over 18 and 19 minutes a night at the start of the season. First line now is only getting 15 minutes a night, and he's barely shooting. He also was on fire at the beginning. I mean, ever since Patrick Kane stepped in, he's not on the first line. Mm-hmm. And even with Patrick Kane out of the lineup, I mean, he's off the top power play and has been for a little bit. I'm not loving DeBrincat's value, but the thing about DeBrincat is he's still a holdable player. I don't think you want to sell low on him at this point. So I don't know, like his hits are down, his shots are down. I'm not super stoked at this point. I don't like the outlook here, but I mean,
is there a bunch of Ottawa fans out there right now feeling justified? Being like, see?
Yeah. Yeah, could be. If there's any Ottawa fans in the chat, let us know. All right, let's get into some disappointing players from the first half. So the first name I have on this list may be a bit of a surprise to some people, but it's Leon Draisaitl. So Leon Draisaitl, his ADP this year was 2.2. So he was picked second almost unanimously over across Yahoo leagues, and using Kekupfel scoring, that's the standard that we're going to set. It's the Keeping Carlson Fantasy League. His rank is 21st. He has 23 goals, 57 points in 45 games, so still pretty great. But he's got it's a 104 point pace, which would actually be his lowest point pace since 2018. So, like, we expect the sun and the moon from Leon Draisaitl, and he's been great, but he hasn't been Leon Draisaitl great. His underlying numbers in terms of individual shot and chance generation are pretty in line with last year. So nothing crazy there. His on-ice stats are both career highs in Corsi 4/60 and scoring chances 4/60. And that kind of lines up with the way that Edmonton's played this year. They've been a crazy possession team. They've been kind of dominating even when they were bad. We were talking about how they were just incredibly unlucky. Their goalies couldn't stop a beach ball, and they were getting all the chances in the world, but just couldn't put the puck in the net. So that does kind of line up with those numbers. His hit rates have split in half. Not that he's a big hitter. And his average time on ice is 20:58, slightly lower than the last few years where it was closer to 22 minutes, but it's not a huge drop off. I'm gonna throw to Adrian first. Leon Draisaitl, what do you think about him? Is he going to get to the level that we saw him last year? Last year, he had over 120 points. Like, do you think that point pace going forward it makes sense? Another caveat here is he has been playing away from McDavid 5v5 a lot more. So that definitely probably factors into some of this decrease in production. What do you think, Adrian?
I mean, what was it, 104 point pace? It's not like he's terrible. But I don't know if he's going to get back to that level. I mean, they had such a terrible start. Their power play is not the same as it was last year. Like, they're not they're just not as good on the power play. They're still winning games, but he was just a power play machine last year, right? Like, how many goals did he get on the power play last year? It was something ridiculous.
He had 60 something power play points.
Really going to juice your point totals. So, I mean, without those, would you draft him second in your league again? No. But I don't think you're going to be unhappy with him either, even if you did draft him that high. It's not like he's hurting you in fantasy. I mean, the first couple weeks probably felt like it, but.
Well, I had McDavid in that points league I'm in. Like, I had McDavid and just I kept losing week after week. I was like, I got McDavid. How am I losing?
How many teams did McDavid and Draisaitl sink in fantasy hockey because of
the
slow start
at the beginning of the season?
For the first few weeks, for sure. But I think they're at least McDavid's making up for it at this point. I think Draisaitl is, but it's tough when you're using that second overall pick and you've got guys like Austin Matthews, Nate McKinnon. You could have had there. Nate McKinnon, I actually ranked him number two. Like, that was a guy that I was taking second overall in almost every league just because. I mean, obviously I didn't expect him to pop this much, but I felt like everything under the hood last year and previous years, I'm like, if he has a healthy season, he could potentially be second best player in the league behind McDavid. Yeah. And sure enough, he's been the best. Unless you count Nikita Kucherov, I think there's a significant argument between those two. But yeah, Nate McKinnon's been popping. But yeah, Draisaitl, I think Adrian, that's a good point about the power play. They're fourth in conversion this year. What were you going to say?
Yeah, him and McDavid they're playing a more defensive all around game too, which is obviously going to affect your point total. If you're not trying to score eight goals a game, you're trying to prevent a couple of them, that really lowers it a little bit. I mean, it's good for them, but for fantasy, not as good.
Yep, fair enough. So I think, fourth in power play conversion when last year they were like literally the best power play of all time. Yeah. I mean, it's still a great power play, but yeah, they're not converting at as high of a clip as they were last year, which was, I mean, truly unsustainable. Mm-hmm. In terms of luck metrics, his IPP individual points percentage is 67%. It's actually his lowest since his rookie season. It's usually closer to 74-75%. So there's definitely some positive regression coming here for Draisaitl. He should be getting in on more points when he's on the ice. And then his shooting percentage is 18.25%. And you may be like, wow, that's great. Like that seems awesome. But really, it's as lowest since 2018. And he's actually been
insane.
That's 19-21% each year since 2018. And this is a low point. So yeah, I mean, Draisaitl is Mr. Efficiency. Like he is unbelievable in terms of shooting percentage. But yeah, that's another reason why in leagues where you have shots as a significant weight, where Draisaitl actually, it kind of hurts his value because he doesn't shoot a ton. He scores a lot, but it's not on an incredibly high shot volume. So, I mean, unless you have shooting percentage as a stat, which you can do in Fantrax, I don't know why you would want to do that, but it seems kind of crazy to me. But
and that just goes back to your point about McKinnon being the second overall pick, because he shoots all the time. That's all he does is shoot.
Yeah. He's near the top of the league every single year, even with injuries. He gets right to the top in shot totals. So, yeah. So Leon Draisaitl, I think he's probably going to be fine. Like there is some positive regression coming, and obviously he is still producing well, like we said. But I think that IPP is going to increase, and maybe even that shooting percentage too. All right, let's move on to Tage Thompson. His ADP was 12.3, so getting picked right near the end of the first round, early second round in most 12-team leagues. His Kakupful rank right now is 139th. His average, if you average out, because he has been hurt a little bit, so I averaged the stats out in terms of per game, and he's 90th. So that's still not very good. He has 14 goals and 28 points in 39 games, which is a 59-point pace. Not great for Tage Thompson. Shots per 60, in terms of his individual stats, he is down from 12.21 last year to 10.84, which is closer to the year prior. His individual Corsi 4 per 60, pretty similar to last year. He's actually 18th in the NHL this year. So his shot attempts are pretty solid. His individual scoring chances 4 per 60 was 12.37 last year. That's an elite number. That's like should be near the top of the league every year. This year it's 8.99, so that's a very significant decrease, but it's actually closer to the year prior, where he had somewhere in the 60-65 point pace, which was a breakout at that point for Tage Thompson, because before that he barely did anything at all. Still shooting a ton, shots aren't getting through, and he's not getting to the areas where he's getting high, high danger chances. His Corsi 4 per 60, so his on-ice stats, his Corsi 4 per 60 is similar to last year, and just like his individual numbers, his scoring chances 4 per 60 are down from 38 to 33, so a pretty significant drop there in terms of his on-ice numbers. Zach, let's talk about Tage Thompson. What do you think? Is this guy going to bounce back? This is the other thing, too, is when you look at those scoring chance numbers and those shot numbers, if you look at the last few years, the outlier seems to be last year, where those numbers were really high. So is it that he's hurt, or is he maybe not the player that we saw last year? What do you think?
I think with Tage Thompson and maybe some of the players on Buffalo is everyone drafts them because they start the season thinking maybe this will be the year that Buffalo actually does something. And for the longest time, Buffalo hasn't done anything and they continue to not do anything. And, you know, like you said, you look at his points over the last couple of years. Like, did anyone think he was going to go 47 and 47 for 94 points again this year? I don't know, but he was drafted as if most people thought he would. Right. And I think there was a lot of hype around Buffalo to start the season where
they're always.
Exactly. Yeah, so then they look at they look at the 94 point season and they go, okay, so if there's going to be more in Buffalo and they're going to be maybe better, well, I'm going to take that value because he's going to be that top player on that team. And
sure,
like you said, he's not getting into the scoring chances. He's a big body. He's not getting there. He's not putting away the close, tight goals that he can or should be putting away. And Buffalo themselves are just not good.
Yeah, I think Nate said on the podcast just a couple days ago that Thompson just recently registered the, according to NHL Edge, the hardest shot in the league, taken in the league this year in game. So he's still firing the puck hard. He's still, still taking shots, like we said. But yeah, like just not getting to those areas. Buffalo's kind of a mess. My opinion, I think, I looked at the power play percentage. Let's look at his luck metrics as well. So his IPP is down from last year. It's not a crazy amount. His shooting percentage is 10.85, and it was over 15% in each of the last 2 years prior. So there probably is some negative regression coming there. Positive regression. His on-ice shooting percentage is 9.29%, and that includes power play time, which is down 4% from last year and 3% from the year before. That's incredibly low for a guy that plays a ton of minutes, plays with the best players, and plays on the power play. So like that, that's probably going to turn around. I think them as a team, they're getting pretty unlucky. And then their power play percentage, they're 28th in the league. Last year, they were near the top. But I remember looking in the off season and looking at the way that they generated chances, looked at their Corsi 4/60, the scoring chances 4/60 on the power play, and they were not very high. They had like a very high shooting percentage on the power play. So it seems like we've kind of negatively regressed, but like maybe even more like we're kind of overcorrecting in the opposite direction. Yep. So I think there's probably is some regression coming there for them as a team. So I think Tage Thompson, I could see him going at like a 70, 75 point pace the rest of the year. Like I don't think he's a 59 point player. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
I don't think that this is what he is. I think there will be some regression coming, but it's maybe not what we expected at the start of the year. I don't think he's a first, second round fantasy asset at this point. Let's go to Alex Ovechkin. So his ADP was 22.9, and his rank this year in Kakupful is 152nd. He has 9 goals, 31 points, and is on pace for 17 goals and 58 points, which are both drastic career lows, like massively. It's crazy. He hasn't scored less than 30 goals in a season in his career. His shots per 60 is 38th in the league. His individual Corsi 4/60 ninth, and his individual scoring chances 4/60 are 85th. They're all career lows, but they're not drastically career lows. And not near that dip, in those underlying stats, it's not proportional to the dip in point totals. I do think that he's having some incredible bad luck. His on-ice stats are around his career average, so nothing crazy there. Like, you talk about Washington being just a shittier team around him and them getting older around him. And, the on-ice numbers don't necessarily dictate that. Like, it seems like they're – they certainly are. Like, eye test, they definitely are a lot worse and older and slower than they used to be. But looking at his on-ice numbers, it's not a drastic difference. he has the lowest hit rates of his career. And that drop is similar in proportion to his drop in individual rates. So it's not a crazy drop, but it is a significant dip, which could indicate just he's an older player that doesn't want to be banging around as much. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So Adrian, I'll throw to you again. Alex Ovechkin, is he washed? Is he done? What do you think?
I mean, on the surface, like, he might be the most disappointing player, and not just because everybody wanted him to break Gretzky's record.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah,
I don't think I was more excited for anything this season than watching him try to get 35 goals, 40 goals, cutting that record in half, and then knowing, like, you know what, he did it this year, he can do it again, then he can retire.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Done.
But, oh, I mean, his shooting percentage, horrible. Way down.
Yeah.
Like, I don't even – he might be washed.
Yeah.
Their power play, garbage. But like you said, he's old. He's not a young man anymore. And you look at Crosby still cooking. Like, age hasn't slowed him down at all. And you would just wonder what happened to Ovechkin for someone who mostly just stood on the ice and took shots.
Yeah, exactly. Well, look at his luck metrics. So his shooting percentage is 5.96, which is pathetic. Like, that's no one shoots that.
That's like
Tanner Janot.
Fourth liner.
Yeah, that's exactly what I mean. That's like Tanner Janot last year numbers. There's no way that's going to stay. Like,
he was worth a first round pick. Average.
Yeah, yeah. Don't speak ill of Tanner Janot.
He was worth an entire draft class, actually.
Exactly. So,
his career average shooting percentage is just under 13%. So that's like more than double. So I think he's probably going to possibly regress. But I mean, we've been saying this all year and it just hasn't really happened. He's had little moments where he has a couple games with a goal and you're like, you're like, oh, okay, here we go. We're going to get shit going again. And it just doesn't sustain. So
it's just such a,
I see this as a huge fail on the management of Washington for not being able to find a center that can actually play with Ovechkin or find players that can play with him.
They have one job and that's just to get Ovechkin goals. Like, I don't think there's any Washington Capitals fans that care if they win. They don't care. Ovechkin gets goals. That's all that matters.
I think Nick Backstrom at the start of the year did have a clean bill of health, and I don't know that they expected him to step away the way that he did.
I guess.
Not having him playing, I think it's just really affected Ovechkin more than anyone would have thought it would have.
Yeah. I think you're right about that. And then his IPP 63%, which is on the lower end of typical for him. So it's not incredibly low, but it is low. And then his on ice shooting percentage is 9.12%, which very similar to Tage Thompson. That's the lowest of Ovechkin's career. So again, Washington just not putting the puck in the net as a team. That's probably gonna positively regress as well. And that's including power play time. So their power play is 27th in the league in terms of conversion. I think that'll probably turn around a little bit too. You got Max Pacioretty out there on the power play on the opposite flank. I still maintain that I like that look. TJ Oshie's been banging on all cylinders since he's been healthy, but you just never know when he's going to go down with another injury. He's injured all the time. Same with Pacioretty, but he's looked pretty solid since coming back. So I don't know. I think there all the underlying stats seem to indicate he is probably declining. But in terms of his point totals this year, like, they should positively regress. Like, he should have a better second.
This is more than just a decline. This is like he jumped straight off,
fell off a cliff. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. It's pretty brutal.
Yeah. It's not like you end the season and it's like, oh, he scored 30 goals instead of 40. Oh, and is he declining? Will he do it again next year? And it's like, no, he's just gone.
Speaking of falling off a cliff, Timo Meier, his ADP is 40.8. His Kekuffel rank is 304th. Again, another guy that's missed some time due to injury, but when you average the stats, 202nd. So still not that great. He has 9 goals and 18 points in 34 games. That's a 43-point pace. That would be his worst pace since his sophomore season. where, I mean, he wasn't playing high in the lineup in San Jose, so wasn't really getting an opportunity to get a lot of points. So not very good. His shots per 60, 52nd in the league. Individual Corsi 4 per 60, 26th. Individual scoring chances 4 per 60, 35th. I mean, that may seem pretty good in terms of ranks, and it is. It's not bad, but those numbers have all seen significant dips. He was among the league leaders in all of these categories over the last couple seasons. And yeah, I mean, seeing such a drop off is a little bit concerning. His Corsi 4 per 60 and scoring chances 4 per 60 have both seen significant dips. That is probably due to the fact that he's been up and down the lineup. He hasn't really found a solidified spot in that New Jersey lineup. Also, has not consistently been on power play one, and actually has often been on power play two. So that probably affects those numbers as well. His hit rates are by far the lowest of his career, and that's part of the value for Timo Meier, is that he bangs bodies out there as well. Mm-hmm. So that certainly hurts. The biggest thing for me, outside of that, is his average time on ice is 16:59, which in San Jose over the prior two seasons, he was getting 19 to 20 minutes a game. They were just playing the shit out of him.
Yeah, they had no one else.
Exactly. So that kind of increased the shot and hit numbers, that kind of gave him really nice value. He's never been a high efficiency converter, but yeah, I mean, this is not good for Timo Meier. No. It's not looking good at all. No. So Adrian, you mentioned that you have Timo Meier in one of your teams, so I am going to throw to you again. So tell me your feelings on Timo right now.
Well, I'm a little disappointed, to say the least. I mean, I did make a trade for him. I traded Chris Letang for Timo Meier, and that has been a major disappointment. I have been saved by my other defensemen. So I didn't need Letang anyways, but I would have liked to get a player back that would have been useful and not somebody I could just pick up on waivers, essentially.
Yeah.
Like he does nothing. I mean, you got to wonder how much that is Hughes being out so long. Would he be played on the top line? I mean, I was just taking a look at their line combinations, and I don't know who their like second line center is. Justin Dowling. I don't know who that is. So
that's bad.
But the rest of his number, like, he, even when he was traded last year, he didn't look great right off the hop. So I don't know if it's just a style of play that he's like, I don't watch a lot of Devils games. I got to admit that, but I don't know if it's a style, like a playing style that just doesn't mesh with the rest of the team or what it is, but like even the playoffs, nothing. He's just done nothing since he got there. You know, he just signed an extension. So I don't know what they're going to do with him.
Yeah, it's a tough one, man. I mean, looking at the luck metrics too, his shooting percentage is a little low for him. It's 9.28%. It's usually around 10 to 12. So again, like I mentioned, not a very high efficiency guy, but it is still a little low for him. His IPP is 60%. It's usually 68 to 80. So I mean, that's a pretty significant drop as well. So could be some positive regression coming there. But it could just be that he's not being utilized the same way as in San Jose. Like, I think part of the reason his IPP is so high was because he had the puck all the time and
who else was firing.
Yeah, exactly. So whereas he's not even close to the number one guy in New Jersey. So, or at least not being utilized that way. So, and then his on-ice shooting percentage is 9.58%, which is the lowest since he started playing at the top of the lineup in San Jose. And again, like I mentioned, that's probably due to him moving up and down the lineup and playing with, not playing with Jack Hughes all the time, not even playing with Nico Hischier all the time. And then also playing a lot of power play 2 minutes. So yeah, man, I don't know what to do with Timo Meier.
New Jersey paid so much for him and to have him just be so meh, but I think he also is being hit with the, because New Jersey doesn't know what they're doing with their season and because they're having such a disappointing start, they can't get a save. I feel like he's a victim of a coach doing, I got nothing. Like, what else am I going to try to do to try to get a win here? And so the coach is just flip flop and swapping all over the place. And someone like Timo Meier is like, well, where do I fit in this if I'm constantly being moved around all over the place?
Yeah, you have to imagine they envisioned him with Jack Hughes at the beginning of the year. and he's missed a lot of time. And they're like, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like Zach said, where do you put him now? He's not a fourth line player, right? Like, you pay him too much. It's just not a skill set.
And you wonder how much it is that New Jersey's just been an injury mess this year. Like, they just haven't been able to find any consistency in any facet of the game, just because so many people have been hurt. Like, Dougie Hamilton's been out most of the season. Yeah. Jack Hughes has been hurt a lot. Timo Meier has been hurt a good amount.
That's true.
As well. Heeshear's been out and hasn't been the same either. Like, they're just like, it's kind of a mess. It's like, it's kind of like a more like a higher skilled Columbus Blue Jackets a little bit, because there's like, no one can stay healthy, but they're like, they're still good enough to like be fighting for a playoff spot. But it's kind of crazy, that team right now. And then Tyler Wilson, this is a good question, and is related. Is Meier a drop in a Bangers Cats at this point? I have Velarde healthy on IR plus right now. I'd be close. It depends.
I actually do have both players, and I have the same issue, and I think I'm going to drop Meier. Like, he's Winnipeg's. I mean, they just lost a couple, but other than that, they're second best team in the league, third best team in the league. And even if he's not individually, you know, known to get a lot of points, he's on a good team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's going to get some points. So my advice would be to go for it.
Like I said, with Timo as well, he's not hitting, and that's part of what makes him valuable in a Bangers Cats league, but he's not doing it anymore. He's not getting the ice time to get those shot numbers up the way that they should be. And his rates have decreased. So it's like, what is he doing for you at this point? So, I think he is honestly a streamer level player at this point, like a bubble, like waiver wire. Like, if New Jersey has a bad schedule, then I think he's the guy. He's getting to the point where he's the guy that you need to cut. It sucks.
Unless you could try to trade him, I guess. I don't know who would take him, but
it's one of those things where he is at his low point. So I don't love I don't love trading someone at their lowest value, but it's like, what is he doing for you either?
Yeah, if you're going to drop him anyways.
It's true.
I suppose if you can get some value back, then that's true. Maybe that's the way to go. All right, Matt Boldy. His ADP was 58, and his rank in Kekupfel is 135th. Not a crazy drop off, but it's been a little disappointing for Matt Boldy. He has 16 goals, 32 points in 42 games. That's a 31 goal, 63 point pace, which is essentially exactly the same as his point totals last year. His shots per 60 is 92nd, which is they're actually down a little bit from last year, not significantly. Individual Corsi 4 per 60. 24th in the league, and his individual scoring chances 4 per 60 are 16th in the league, and the Corsi 4 and the scoring chances 4 are both significant career highs. So he's really, really elevated the way that he's shooting and getting scoring chances. His on-ace numbers, his Corsi 4 per 60 is 32nd in the league, and his scoring chances 4 per 60 are 16th. Those are both career highs by far for him. His average time on ice is 18.04, which is down about 30 seconds from last year. The thing with Matt Boldy is doesn't get a lot of exposure to Kirill Kaprizov, which is kind of what you want in Minnesota, other than on the power play. So it's tough to project him, because I think he's a guy that clearly, looking at his numbers, drives his line. But it's like, if he's playing with Freddie Gaudreau and, I don't know, Marcus Johansson.
They've got him with Marcus Johansson and Joel Eriksson-Ek right now.
Yeah, and Eriksson-Ek's great too, but he's a guy that's
a shutdown guy.
He's a shutdown guy. He's a shot monster, but not a guy that's putting the puck in the net as much as you'd like him to. Like, he's not a high efficiency shooter. Boldy's still kind of on an island by himself there. So I don't know. So, Zach, do you have any opinions on Matt Boldy? What are we doing with him? Do we, in order to kind of reach this breakout that we expect him to have, because a lot of people had him as basically a point per game player. And based on the underlying numbers, it seems like he could be that at some point, but maybe he's just not in the right situation right now. What do you think, man?
Yeah, I think Matt Boldy is what Matt Boldy is. Like, if you look at everything that he's put up in the last couple of seasons, I think he just is the player that he is. And I think he also got the benefit of being a younger player who had a hot season, and like the ADP at 58, I think a lot of that had to do with, well, maybe this year he'll be better, and people are overreaching a little bit for him at the beginning. I don't know if I would have put Matt Boldy at 58 at the beginning of the season personally. So the fact that he was at 58 is actually surprising to me, because I just think he is what he is, and maybe someone we're going to talk about some surprises later. And, you know, I think people were hoping for a surprise out of Matt Boldy, but I think he just is who he is.
Yeah. Like you're saying that I think people were drafting him that high, expecting a breakout that just hasn't been there. Yeah. Fair enough. So his shooting percentage is 13.79. That's pretty normal for him. IPP about right, 61.5%, which is low for a guy that plays on a line with a couple scrubs. You would expect the IPP to be a little bit higher, mm-hmm. Since he is kind of the guy driving the bus there. So I think there's room for improvement in that IPP. Like I elite players are usually in the 70, like mid 70s, at least, if not higher than that. So I think that he has the makings of someone that could get there. Their power play right now, this is an interesting stat. Their power play is 17th in conversion, but they are second in both Corsi 4 per 60 and scoring chances 4 per 60. They're bottom third in shooting percentage. So that, I think that is also a big factor, mm-hmm. is that he is a prime player on that power play, and they're just not converting. They're generating so much. Like they're the way that they're generating, they should be one of the best power plays in the league, and they were last year, but they just aren't converting. They're not getting the puck luck, so maybe there is some positive regression coming there. Yeah, and I don't know that he's necessary. Go ahead, Adrian.
Oh, sorry, I was just gonna say, I don't think Kaprizov's having a good year either, so like, yep. With him, mm-hmm. you know, he's your power play, he's the main person the power play is running through. If he's having a down year, Matt Boldy's probably gonna have a down year there too, and like Zach said, he probably is what he is. His point pace the exact same as last year. Like,
yeah,
he's a good player. He's just not a great player.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, for sure. I think that let's move on to Erik Karlsson. So this is our last disappointing skater. Erik Karlsson, his ADP was 38.6, which is third among D. So he's the third D off the board in Yahoo leagues. His current rank in Kakupful is 122nd, which puts him 20th among D. He has 7 goals, 34 points in 46 games, which is a 61 point pace, which is good for a defenseman, like all things told. In terms of defensive ranks with underlying numbers, his shots per 60 are 36th in the league. Individual Corsi 4 per 60, 12th. And individual scoring chances 4 per 60 are 11th, which are all about right for him. So he's not really doing a whole lot different under the hood. On ice numbers, Corsi 4 per 60 is 5th. And scoring chances 4 per 60 are 2nd, and they are career highs for him. So when he's on the ice, that's not super surprising, because he's mm-hmm. like, he's on the ice with guys like Crosby, Malkin. Yeah, like that. That's kind of what we expected under the hood coming from Erik Karlsson in terms of on ice numbers. Average time on ice is 24 minutes. What are we thinking about Erik Karlsson? Zach, I'll throw to you again, since we've been to Adrian a couple times in a row. Zach, what do you think about Erik Karlsson? Is there going to be a bounce back? Is Pittsburgh going to figure this shit out?
I can't believe there's talk right now. People are talking about getting Crosby out of Pittsburgh, as if like that's the hot topic right now.
That's the answer.
Crosby would want to leave Pittsburgh because Pittsburgh's doing nothing, and Crosby wants to go win more cups.
They do say if he leaves, he might go with Montreal, Zach. So you know what? Maybe that's what we should be hoping for.
Sure, you can have Sean Monahan. You can have Sean Monahan exactly. Take Crosby back one for one.
Yeah.
I think Dubas would make that trade.
Yeah, give Doobie a call.
Yeah.
Yeah. He likes Monahan's underlying numbers.
Yeah. Again, same as Matt Boldy, the fact that Erik Karlsson is third out of defensemen picked at the beginning of the season, it leads to the reason that everyone was talking to San Jose about getting rid of Erik Karlsson and trading him was because of how crazy his season was last year. And everyone was talking about, you're never going to get a higher value than where he is now. And I think that just led into the fantasy season as well. And there's a chance that, yes, he would have kept putting up those point totals. But I think the fact that going into the season, you knew he was going to be fighting for time with Chris Letang, like taking him third as risky. Like as your third top defense is risky. It is very bold. I like that he has kind of set himself from Chris Letang. So that bodes well if you have Erik Karlsson on your team. And he's still going to put up points at the end of the day. Like if you're in a league where you need points from your defenseman, not hits and blocks. Like he's a sweet guy to have on your D line, even at a disappointing season.
It's I was actually just looking at his career points though. It's not as disappointing as you think. It's fairly average for him to be on pace for 61 points. I think part of the reason that it seems weird is because when he was in Ottawa or even the end of San Jose, he was the only player on the team. So the only one doing it.
Yeah.
Right? So it seems like he does a lot. Like, and don't get me wrong, he's a good player. He's a great player. He's got three Norris trophies. He does get a ton of points for D-man, but like 101 points was not like something that he'd been leading up to for a long time. It's not like he was right around there every year. I think before that, the highest point total was 82, a point a game.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I'd be curious to know if there's, and you might know this answer, Josh, are you able to tell in his points if it's secondary assists or first assists?
Yeah.
Is there stats there?
You can look that up on Natural Stat Trick. Nate did a study not too long ago. He's talked about this on the show before that indicated that he doesn't actually feel like the whole secondary assist argument really is like carries a lot of weight. And that typically year to year, people that had a lot of secondary assists one year, typically the secondary assists will just turn into primary assists and their numbers aren't actually affected that much year to year. For guys that are heavily have a ton of secondary assists.
Is that part of the eye test, right?
So
thinking that maybe you're not noticing Erik Karlsson as much because there's other players around him, like what Adrian was saying, whereas in San Jose and Ottawa, he's that primary guy dealing the puck. Whereas in Pittsburgh, maybe he's not the primary guy,
he's on the ice
with a bunch of good players. So he's still getting those points.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a factor when you're watching Erik Karlsson and like these look back, like here's some key numbers here. So his shooting percentage is 6.42. That is down 5.5% from last year. He shot almost 12%, which for a defenseman is ridiculous. There was no chance that he was going to get there again. But 6.42 is still slightly lower than average for him. He is a pretty high efficiency converter for a defenseman still. His IPP is 49%. Last year it was 67. So I mean, you would expect, like you mentioned, his individual points percentage is probably going to drop because there's more mouths to feed on the Pittsburgh Penguins. Just like you mentioned, it's probably not going to be 67%, but I would expect it to be more in like the 50s, if not low 60s. So there probably is some positive regression coming there in terms of IPP. Their power play, this is the biggest key. Their power play is 31st in the NHL, which is not what anyone expected.
No.
Their shooting percentage. So, and this is another thing. I mentioned this very similar to Minnesota. Their Corsi 4 per 60 and is sixth in the league on the power play, and their scoring chances 4 per 60 is fifth, but their shooting percentage is dead last, 32nd. So they are the best. The most unlucky power play in the entire league, essentially based on those numbers. So that is certainly going to turn around. They have split the power play units up now. Like the last game, they had split up Crosby and Malkin. They put Letang with Crosby. They put Karlsson with Malkin. I don't like teams doing that ever because it sucks for fantasy. And I just don't think it ever actually works. I think you should be putting all your best guys out there on a power play like with that opportunity. But I'm not a coach, so So that may hurt Carlson's value there.
I think
it's just going to go with split power plays. What are you saying, Zach?
Well, if Pittsburgh also, if they get on board and they end up trading someone like Gensel too, that'll affect his points totals a little bit.
Yeah,
too.
Like if they decide to start selling. Yeah,
that's if they decide to start selling, yeah. Then.
Yeah.
So I'd be watching what the Pittsburgh Penguins are doing as a franchise, because I don't think will drastically change Carlson's point totals.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about some surprises. And by surprises, I mean good surprises, like positive surprises, guys that have popped this year that maybe you didn't expect, or maybe you did. But in terms of the ADP and Yahoo, people in Yahoo leagues didn't expect this to happen. So we'll start off with this is the biggest one. Sam Reinhart, his ADP was 96.7. He is the sixth ranked player in Kickupful. He has 37 goals, 62 points in 49 games so far. That is a 62 goal, 104 point pace. His previous career highs are 33 goals. So he's already smashed his career high in goals, and 82 points. And that was 2 years ago, his first year in Florida. Underlying numbers, his shots per 60, 164th. Individual Corsi 4 per 60, 137th. Individual scoring chances 4 per 60, 55th. So not necessarily a high volume shooter, but getting to some pretty good areas to get those goals. Those are all, and like in terms of the numbers, they're all pretty in line with his numbers since he came to Florida. So he's not really doing a ton different under the hood. Corsi 4 per 60 is he's 18th, and that is a career high by far. His scoring chance of 4 per 60 is 31st in the league, and that's pretty similar to last year. Part of that is he's played pretty consistently with Sasha Barkov, and he is notoriously like an incredible, anyone that plays on his line, their on ice numbers skyrocket. So
just ask Jonathan Huberto.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. His average time on ice this year is 20 minutes, 17 seconds, which doesn't hurt either. So Adrian, Sam Reinhart, is he for real?
Wow.
Is he going to tail off?
I think we got to ask, is Sam Reinhart going to win a Rocket this year? I think that's the real question. Can he beat Austin Matthews?
Yeah, that's
the discussion. What's the bet line on that right now? I would wonder what that is. Should look on FanDuel and see.
I you could probably get some decent odds on it. I mean, it seems unlikely, but you never know. He's only, what, three goals? How many goals behind him is he now? Three?
He's three yeah, goals behind
him. So he could do it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's possible.
Sam Reinhart, is he for real? I don't. I mean, this is. He's always been a good player since he got to Florida. But I don't think he's never been this good, obviously. And
yeah,
so I do know, I actually work with a guy who's a Florida fan, so all he could talk about is Sam Reinhart. So he was telling me today that his shooting percentage is abnormally high, which I'm sure helps.
Yeah.
He's also got a bunch of shorthanded goals, but he's still getting goals.
Yeah.
So
yeah, he's scoring in every situation.
Yeah.
Right?
I wouldn't consider this his, new average, but
yeah,
I mean, enjoy while it lasts. If you drafted him, what, 96 overall, like that's a hell of a find.
Yeah, I ain't drafting him in my top 10 next year. I can tell you that much.
No, I don't think he's not quite at that level.
Nobody
I think,
will.
Like, it's possible. Yeah. So, Adrian, you mentioned the shooting percentage. It's 27.6 so far this year. Now he is a high efficiency converter. It's usually in the high teens, like 16-17%, which is really good. Yeah, like is kind of what you expect, but 27 is crazy. Mm-hmm. IPP this year is 78.4%. His previous career high is 70%, and that was his last year in Buffalo when they had basically nobody, and he was the only guy that was scoring that year. He's typically in the low 60s. So low 60s is not like elite player numbers in terms of IPP, but I don't think it's unreasonable to expect him to be like 70% if he's playing on a line with Barkov and playing on the top power play and all that. He has 20 power play goals so far this year, which is insane.
That is a lot.
Power play goals does he have as a person than teams in the NHL?
Oh, that's a good question. You look that up and we'll discuss that. He is shooting 44% on the power play. And but this actually, like, then that seems it like incredibly high, but he has actually done this three times in his career, a shot over 40% on the power play. So he's a guy that is just in a good area. I think he plays the bumper position. So
yeah,
he's kind of a trigger man. So it's not crazy. It is crazy, but it's not like,
Done this before. It's not crazy for him.
He has done that before, but 20 power play goals is insane. Like, and it's come somewhat out of nowhere.
He's also never played with players of this high caliber. Like, he's never played with anyone like Barkov before.
100%.
Right. Like, that's got to help. Like, he's had the shooting percentage on the power play, but if he's getting better passes now, that's going to lead to some more goals and stuff like that. So it makes sense.
Another interesting stat, Florida is extremely strong in power play shot and chance generation, but they are bottom half in the league in shooting percentage, despite his shooting percentage individually being 44%. So no one else is scoring on the power play. It's just Cam
Reinhart. Everything's running through him.
And despite that, they are 10th. They're the 10th best power play in the league. So, if anything, I think some of his teammates are going to score more. He's probably going to get some more assists on the power play. But anyways, you were going to say, what were you saying, Zach?
So he is tied with San Jose, Buffalo, and Pittsburgh for whole team power play goals. And he has more power play goals by himself than Washington and Chicago as a team.
That's crazy. That is insane. So Sam Reinhart, I think he's the type of guy. I think that his performance 2 years ago, his point per game performance, that I think is what you should expect from Sam Reinhart. Mm-hmm. Last year, he was down in the mid 60s in terms of points, and that was a really disappointing year for him. So I think he's a guy that you can pretty much bank on getting point per game. I think rest of season, probably a little bit higher than that, just based on the way that they've deployed him. So maybe like a 90 point pace. But I expect the goal totals to slow down at some point, but I don't know. Maybe this is like a Chris Kreider season where he just shoots at that clip the entire year. It does happen.
It's a contract year for him. So he's got to secure the bank.
Think about the money he is making himself right now.
Yeah.
He's a
Blake is going to love that you said that. He loves the contract year thing and Nate hates it. Nate is not a believer in the contract year bump. But
there seems to be a lot of examples to prove it, though.
I was going to say, I'd be on the side of saying there's it's a thing.
I'm a believer.
Blake's nickname for Sam Reinhart is the Sex Panther. All right. On that note, let's go to
60% of the time it works every time.
Yeah, exactly. So Forsberg's ADP was 142.8. And his rank in Kekuffle is 13th. He has 23 goals, 50 points in 50 games. So that's a 48 goal, 82 point pace. His previous career highs are 42 goals and 84 points, although that wasn't 69 games. Nice. 2 years ago. That was the year where Nashville, all of their top four guys shot like over 20% shooting percentage, like Matt Duchene, Ryan Johansson. It was crazy. Tanner Janot as well. and then everyone decided that he was amazing. Shots per 60, sixth in the league. Individual Corsi 4 per 60, second. His numbers are both career highs in those categories significantly. Mm-hmm. His individual scoring chances 4 per 60 is 19th, and his numbers there are similar to the last couple of years. His on-ice numbers, Corsi 4 per 60, 33rd in the league. Scoring chances 4 per 60, 24th. Those are both career highs. So that is crazy because he is playing in Nashville, right?
Yep.
Playing with Ryan O'Reilly and Gustav Nyquist typically. And so that shows that Phil Forsberg is driving his line. He's doing everything. Like, this is... he's shown that he could be this player in the past, but he's taken it to another level this year in terms of the underlying numbers and point totals, really. Yeah. His average time on ice is 19 minutes, and that's near the highest of his career. Zach, what are we saying about Philip Forsberg? Is this guy for real, man?
Philip Forsberg has been one of those guys. I've drafted him many years in fantasy, and there'll be years where I draft him and I'm like, oh man, I got a steal on Philip Forsberg because I took him pretty late. And then there's other years where you take him high and then he he disappoints the crap out of you. So I think he's just this streaky player and he is having a good year. Like you mentioned, obviously the 84 point season, that was just when Nashville was doing craziness. The fact that he is driving that line does speak to something being there, but he's always been this streaky guy. So this might be a hot take, but I would consider selling high on Philip Forsberg right now. I don't know if this can carry on. And just looking where Nashville is in the standings too, I don't think they have a team to really make a push. And I don't see this continuing further on. He's not going to drop off a cliff, but the value that he has right now, if you can find someone that really highly values him, sell him.
Zach, if you're selling, I'm buying. I'm all over Philip Forsberg. I completely disagree. So looking
at too bad I don't have Philip Forsberg to trade you.
Yeah, I know. I'm like looking at your Dynasty League roster, seeing if you have Philip Forsberg.
I don't.
So his luck metrics, his shooting percentage is actually below his career average so far this year. His career average is 12.7%. He's shooting 11.68%. His IPP is 69%, also nice, which is about average for him. So there is literally nothing under the hood that indicates that like he's on an absolute bender. Mm-hmm. I genuinely think that this guy, and like maybe these individual numbers are skyrocketing because there's no one else to play with, but the fact that he's converting, he is driving his line despite. I mean, Ryan O'Reilly's no slouch.
Should we put a little wager on this one, on his point pace? Oh,
okay, let's. Rest of season.
Yeah, you give me an over under.
Okay,
should you pick an over and under?
So now let's look. Okay, so let's look his point pace right now. What is his point pace? 82. 82. Points. Okay, so yeah. So let's put it at actually.
Put it at the 84. Does he beat his 2021-2022 season?
See, that's a tough one because he was on a bender that year. On a shooting percentage bender that year. So I don't think I'm not sure that he's going to get
taking that one.
I'm not taking that one. I think the over under, we have to set it a little bit lower. So let's go over under. Let's go 78 points. I say he goes over.
I take the under 70.
Okay, perfect. All right. It's a bet then.
It's a bet. I don't know what we're wagering, but it's a bet.
I don't know. We'll figure it out.
Well, now you have a reason to pay attention to Nashville.
Zach, let's do a round of golf.
There you go. Done.
I'll buy your. Yeah. Okay. Perfect.
Done. Love it. I can't wait. Right. I can't wait for the free round of golf.
All right. Let's move on. You know what? I think we are going pretty long, so I think I'm just gonna talk about the Montreal Canadian players because that's kind of, I mean, those are the guys you want to talk about. I would think you guys.
I do like talking about Montreal players,
so we'll touch on them. So we'll start with Mike Matheson. His ADP is 167.1. His rank in Kakuffle is 69. Baby, there's a lot of 69s coming up.
I'm sensing a theme.
Yeah, it's interesting.
There's your show title.
Yeah. Maybe I'll have to change it in post. Mike Matheson so far this year, 7 goals, 34 points in 49 games. So that is a 12 goal, 57 point pace. He only played 48 games last year, but he had almost identical numbers, 8 goals, 34 points. So literally one more goal than he was at this point.
I will be back in just a second here, guys. Sorry.
Got so ahead of my heart. No worries. Yeah, no worries. No worries.
All of a sudden I hear the dog and I'm like, uh-oh.
All right. So his shots per 60, 26 in the league. Individual Corsi 4 per 60, 54th. Individual scoring chances 4 per 60, 59th. Those are defense ranks. That doesn't count forwards. Mm-hmm. Those are all very in line with his career numbers. His on-ice numbers, Corsi 4 per 60, 121st. Scoring chances 4 per 60, 72nd. Not surprising because he is playing on Montreal. Yep. I don't think anyone has very good on ice numbers on Montreal, and actually those are not bad considering the team he plays for. His hit rates this year are way down, which isn't surprising because he's probably, I imagine that they're using him more as like an offensive player and like a puck carrier than he has been in the past. And then his block rates are actually at a career high. So he's going to, and then with his average time on ice being a career high at 25.18, he's going to have a career high in blocks. Like it's not even going to be close. So
yeah, you can thank David Savard for that. Cause
oh yeah.
David Savard, why is that? David Savard is an animal, and
yeah,
playing with David Savard has really, I think, helped Mike Matheson in that regard, because
yeah,
not only is Mike Matheson the offensive defenseman, he's also part of that shutdown pair when he's paired with David Savard. So he just automatically blocks shots, and Montreal's always had pretty good shot blocking.
So I'm curious to hear, about your take on Mike Matheson rest of season. What do we think about him?
I wouldn't get rid of him at all. There was the point at the beginning of the season where there was a couple players, like there was talk of maybe Justin Barron, players like that, that could maybe push that PP one time and be that top, you know, left-handed defenseman. I mean, Barron's right, but you know what I mean? No one can do it. Like Matheson's going to stay on PP one. He's not going to lose that spot. He's going to continue to be on the top pair. Having Matheson on one, and he's not going anywhere. Long story short, there's no one else in Montreal that's going to take his spot, at least not this year. And we'll see what happens next year. But for this year, if you have Mike Matheson, hold on to him. I don't have him there in the Apples and Genos. I didn't get a chance to draft him, but I have him in the other one. And the amount of times that someone's asked for a trade for Mike Matheson, I'm like, nope.
Yeah,
you better offer me something good, because there's no one else in Montreal that can do what he's doing, and he's just going to keep racking up those points in that regard.
Yeah, you got to pay the Habs fan tax.
Exactly.
Got to pay a little extra to pry a Hab player out of Zach's hands. So the shooting percentage on the year is 5.51, which is actually the lowest since his first full year in the league. He's typically around 6-7%. So there could actually be like a higher ceiling for him in terms of goal scoring. Mm-hmm. His IPP is 54.84%, which is a career high. It's only up slightly from last year, but it has been way higher in Montreal than any other stop in his career. Not super surprising, just because he's being utilized in a more offensive role than he ever has been. And then on ice shooting percentage is 9.81%, which is actually down 2% from last year. Montreal was at times on a bit of a shooting percentage bender. I know at the start of the year, Nick Suzuki was shooting at a crazy click.
Caulfield was at a terrible clip. Like he was,
yeah.
Like the shooting percentage on Caulfield was so unlucky. They were a very hit and miss shooting percentage team.
Yeah. This is the other thing, something that's different from prior years is their power play is the 19th ranked power play in the league. Although they're near the bottom of the league in Corsi for and scoring chances for generation per 60.
Yep.
Shooting percentage is 16th in the league. So it's not like, it's not crazy high, but it's maybe a little high for what they generate. Mm-hmm. So I don't know.
Building up that Monahan trade value, sitting him in the bumper, just being like,
yeah, maybe that's what Monahan it is.
In the bumper, and
they've had a consistent power play one unit, which is like pretty much the entire year, which does make a huge difference. So maybe the consistency is helping.
Pittsburgh
so
needs to take a hint.
So I brought up Nick Suzuki. We'll talk about him next. We'll finish off our skater segment with him. His ADP 157.6, and he is ranked 80th. So he is outperforming his ADP. He has 13 goals, 42 points in 49 games. He is on a 22 goals, 70 point pace. His career high is 26 goals and 66 points in 82 games last year. So he is on pace to beat his point total, but not his goal total. Mm-hmm. So that kind of is in line with what I was saying about how he shot at a pretty high clip last year. His shots per 60. So this is where it gets a little crazy. And this is Nick Suzuki is kind of a guy that notoriously gets hated on the Apples and Genos podcast, just because he has terrible underlying numbers. So, the shots per 60, 328th, individual course four per 60, 462nd, individual scoring chances four per 60, 338th. And then his Corsi four per 60, these are the on ice numbers, 279th, scoring chances four per 60, 216th. Those are both the highest of his career. And I wonder if that's just because he plays with Cole Caulfield. Like, you know what I mean? Like, because Caulfield fires the puck from everywhere.
Yeah.
His average time on ice, 21.08. Not, I mean, he played a shit ton last year as well. So they play the shit out of him.
Yes, they do. They've doesn't, got no other like centers to play.
Doesn't like shooting the puck.
He's never been a shot. He's never been a shooter.
Is this a 70-point player, Zach? Is this what you expect from Nick Suzuki?
Yeah, I don't expect much from Nick Suzuki, to be honest. Nick Suzuki has the benefit of being in Montreal right now and being there at a time where there's no center depth whatsoever, and immediately gets thrust into first line center because he's the only one that can do it. He's got fairly decent defensive numbers. You know, he can win a faceoff. So he's being used a lot, but he's never been the shot first. He's never been the offensive dynamic player. I think he just is what he's a 60, 70 point guy every year. And that's just what he is going to be. You know, I don't think he's the future number one center of the Montreal Canadiens, right?
Right.
Maybe he's the future number two center of the Montreal Canadiens, but he's not going to be. If Montreal is hoping that this rebuild ends with Nick Suzuki being their first line center, we might have some bigger issues.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough, man. So what you're saying is you're hoping for Macklin Celebrini is what you're saying.
Give me Macklin Celebrini.
Yeah,
Adrian's back.
I am.
Adrian's back. So Nick Suzuki, is he your top center of the future? Is he a 70-point player? What do you think, man?
70-point player. I mean,
you think so?
He's 24 now. I think everything he's ever done has indicated that this is what he is. I think he's better defensively this year. So I do think he's a solid 200-foot player. If you have a second line center getting you 75 points, who can play on the penalty kill, can play on the power play, are you really complaining? As long as we can find somebody, is Kirby Dach that guy? If he stays healthy, maybe. But yeah, that's a big if at this point. So
there are some people that are really high on Kirby Dach and actually think that he has a higher ceiling than Nick Suzuki, which I think is a weird thought to have. But
I don't think it's out.
Yeah,
it's out of the realm of possibility. Like, I think in terms of offensive generation, he does have better numbers. I don't think Kirby Dach really has really blows me away under the hood either. But like,
no.
I think that. I mean, he's got room to grow. The other thing is it's a pretty small sample size for him because he's been hurt so much.
Yep.
So sure. I think there's certainly room to grow for Kirby Dach, but we do have a pretty good sample size from Nick Suzuki. And Adrian, you missed it, but his underlying numbers are very bad. Very, very bad in terms of offensive generation. His luck metric, but looking at his luck metrics, shooting percentage is 11.8, which is down from last year. So that does kind of like okay. I mentioned, he was shooting at a higher clip last year, but his goal total, he's on pace for fewer goals this year than last year. His IPP is 72.4 this year. He's typically in the mid 60s. So I think there's probably a bit of negative regression coming here for Nick Suzuki.
I think a lot of that has to do with what Cole Caulfield's doing, because the two of them are attached at the hip.
It's true. Mm-hmm.
Right. If Cole Caulfield's having a down year, which he is, and a lot of that, I think, has to do with luck, like his shooting percentage is down by quite a bit year over year. So he's not putting the puck in as easily as he has.
No, and I do wonder if that's his shoulder surgery affecting him.
Yeah. Did the shoulder do something? I think there's also a lot to be said about their defensive play. I think they're being trusted more in the defensive zone, so they're not getting as much offensive time as they would have in previous years. And I think that's part of what Martin St. Louis has been trying to do, is round them into better overall players.
And I think that's working for some of their players. So, and that is going to affect the point total of Cole Caulfield, which is going to drop Nick Suzuki's point total, because he's not a shooter. He's a passer.
When you play with Montreal, just is, yeah, they're just an average team right now. Like you said, they're literally average. Their record is average. Their power play is average. Their penalty kill is average. Their players are average. Everything about the Montreal Canadiens right now is average.
I don't think
I think average is generous.
Wow.
They've never been. What was I looking at the other day? Like, they've never been three games under 500 or two games over 500.
They're literally average,
the whole year they've literally been.
I mean,
wise, average.
I don't. Maybe their play on the ice hasn't been average. I think their goaltenders are bailing them out a lot.
We're
used to that. That's how we get high.
Fair enough.
Like, the amount of shots on goal that Montreal is allowing is insane.
Speaking of goalies, I do want to ask before we kind of finish this up, do you guys implement the 0G strategy when drafting? Do you fade goalies? Do you push them down to the bottom? What do you think?
Sure do.
Those were my
picks. Oh, nice.
So yeah, I did the same thing. My goalies that I drafted, that kind of backfired me on a little. I did draft Akira Schmid, and he was terrible.
Yeah,
doesn't help that New Jersey was bad too. So I was expecting some more wins out of him. I'm like, he'll get me some wins, but he did not do that either.
Yeah,
that's
goalies
the
are magic beans.
When you spend so little draft capital on, and that's what we preach here at Apples and Genos for the most part, is when you spend so little draft capital, it doesn't really matter if you drop them and try and pick someone else up. So like I was just gonna go through a few guys really quickly, disappointments and surprises, just to kind of like enforce the 0G argument. So let's look at the number one drafted goalie in fantasy this year, Igor Shesterkin. His ADP was 15.8, which is incredible. That's stupidly high. But he's ranked actually 17th in Kekuffel scoring among goalies. He has an 899 save percentage through 32 starts with 19 wins. So still winning games, but his save percentage is pretty bad. He is 45th in the league in goal save above expected, which is just above zero. So he actually is playing the way he is expected to play, based on what the Rangers allow. But the Rangers, they are 10th in the league in scoring chances against per 60. So they actually are a decent defensive team. But he's still got an 899 save percentage. But this is a guy you draft. Like, the people that draft Igor Shesterkin are expecting him to be like 920 or like Vezina caliber, and also play a ton of games, which he never really has. So I don't quite understand. His career high is 58 starts, which is quite high. A few, but even still. And he is 18th in the league in saves. So in terms of volume, you're not even getting as much volume as you would have expected either. Now let's go to Jake Ottinger. He was drafted third among goalies. He is 19th. In terms of ranking, now part of that is he was injured, but he also has an 899 save percentage on the year through 27 starts. Now he gets a ton of volume when he's healthy, but he is 67th in the league in goal save above expected at -3.5. And Dallas is an even better defensive team. They're actually sixth in the league in scoring chances against per 60. So they don't allow a ton, but he's not playing up to what you would expect from Jake Ottinger. He had 61 starts last year, so obviously you can't expect value or volume from Jake Ottinger, but maybe not the value that you're getting at the draft position that you're picking him. And then the last one here in terms of disappointments, Jonas Korpisalo, he was drafted a little bit lower, like actually was kind of a 0G guy that I would pick up late in the draft, but his ADP was 93.1, which is 15th among goalies. His rank is 33rd. He has an 888 through 28 starts, 11 wins. And he is 91st, which is last place in the entire league, and goals save above expected at -13.4. And Ottawa, actually, in terms of scoring chances against per 60, they're not that bad. Like, they're a middling team. They're 17th in the league. And we talk about them being like a god-awful defensive team, But in terms of that statistic specifically, I mean, maybe not as bad as everyone thinks. So their goaltending has been truly awful. Terrible. So
yeah, he was definitely one of those players that I was watching at the end of the draft too. And yeah, the only reason being Ottawa should have a decent year is what everyone was talking about based on the team that yep. they had. Maybe they take a step up. Everyone's talking about maybe they're pushing for a wild card spot this year. And you think about, okay, they picked him up for a reason. He's going to be their starting goaltender. He's going to be getting a lot of starts. He could be one of those guys that you hop in and out of on your team. And it's just been hot garbage.
Yeah, it's been a good year to really preach the zero G strategy, because there's been a lot of really disastrous goaltending situations. Yep. So like, here's the thing. So if you fade goalies to the end, I mean, I picked up Sergei Bobrovsky in four different places really late in the draft, and he's been awesome. Mm-hmm. And that's great. But then if you pick up a guy like you mentioned, Jonas Korpisalo, who you could have got in a zero G situation, and he shits the bed, doesn't really matter. You can drop him. Adrian said Akira Schmid, same thing. Drop him. Pick up a guy like Connor Ingram, was not drafted in Yahoo leagues.
Yep.
He's sixth among goalies in Kekupfel scoring. He has a 916 save percentage through 30 starts, 17 wins, fourth in the league in goal save above expected at plus 14.5. And Arizona is terrible on defense. They're 26th in the league in scoring chances against per 60. So he is way outperforming what they are allowing. He's playing extremely well and is getting a ton of volume as well. Karl Vemelka has not been good this year. So what was a straight tandem has turned into Connor Ingram's net. So, and that's the situation you're looking for. You got to be all over this shit. And then you get way better value earlier in the draft with skaters.
Yeah.
And you're not wasting things on Shesterkin.
That's the thing. Like Korpisalo could have been Ingram, right? Like in any of these situations, Ottawa could be doing what Arizona's doing at the beginning of the season.
Yeah.
So you just kind of, yeah. It's go push him to the end.
And then Joey DeCord's another guy. He started 21 of Seattle's last 23 games. He is seventh among goalies in Kekupfel scoring. Peter Mrazek is 12th among goalies on the Chicago Blackhawks. He has a 910 save percentage.
Isn't that
insane? On the Blackhawks.
It earned Mrazek him a nice new contract extension.
And he is mostly not rostered in Yahoo League. So like, that's a guy people are sleeping on. So I would definitely,
if he's not picked up in your league, pick him up.
If you're having goalie troubles, for sure. Correct. Yeah. And then, Alex Lyon, is the last guy. He is 20th among goalies, but over the last month, he's first. He has a 924 save percentage on the season, has 13 wins and 20 starts, but he's started 14 of Detroit's last 15 games. So he's been their volume starter for a bit. Now Ville Husso is coming back soon. We'll see kind of what they do with the net there, but Husso was pretty bad to start the year too. So
I think there was a lot of smart general managers in fantasy that took Lyon pretty late and at the end, or picked him up off of waivers after, just based on what he did in Florida. He's doing it again now with Detroit. Yeah. Like, he's just one of those guys that, if you were paying attention to last year and you're taking a flyer on a goalie at the very end of your draft, I think there's a lot of people that just took him and are now going, yep, good choice.
Taking a flyer on a goalie, it doesn't appear that it looks like it doesn't hurt to take an ex-Florida goalie.
Yeah.
There might be some value there every year. So if they let one of their goalies go this year, you know who to look for next year.
That's right. Anthony Stolarz next year, zero GQ.
That's right.
Yep.
All right. Well, I was going to do a mailbag segment, but we've got an hour and 23 minutes. So I think I'm going to call it now. So thank you boys for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
I don't think I've had educated Montreal Canadiens takes on the podcast because I just haven't had any Montreal fans on the show.
Well, if you ever want to do a straight Montreal podcast, you know who to come talk to.
That's right.
Well, I don't want to do that, but maybe someday we could do just a straight hockey podcast, like a hockey stories a podcast. That would be fun. That's something I'd like to do at some point. So.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, we'll talk.
We'll talk.
Yeah, Well, please leave us a review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Thank you to those who already have. It's helped us a lot with our audience growth. Subscribe to our YouTube channel. We're trying to hit 1,000 subscribers by the end of the season. Even if you just listen to the audio, go to your YouTube, hit subscribe. It helps us out a ton. If you like our content, check out the Apples and Genos Patreon to support us on a monthly basis. Hop into the Apples and Genos Discord server as well. We're having tons of discussions about fantasy hockey in there. Shout outs to the band there for providing our music. Their Spotify link is in the episode subscription. Follow us on X. Nate is at Apples Genos. Blake is at Blake Creamer AG. I'm at Just Josh and 41. Do you want your Twitter handles out there?
I don't.
Don't have Twitter.
Okay, I would be a
no Twitter over here.
I'd be a pretty big disappointment. So,
fair enough. All right, please practice safe stats and happy streaming. Have a good one, folks.